continue now with our series of tales of the Holy Baal Shem Tov. As known, Ivduas Hashem B'Simcha, to serve God with joy, was one of the cardinal principles in Teilas of Baal Shem Tov. And so to see a smile on the holy face of the Baal Shem Tov was not a chiddush, it was not a novelty. However, for the Baal Shem Tov to laugh outright, and to do so three times within a Friday night meal, was truly a chiddush, was truly a novel experience, which was seen by the Talmidei HaBaal Shem, the Holy Chevrayah, the Holy Assembly, and they were agog and a wonder at what was the meaning of the Baal Shem Tov's laughing three times in quick succession during the very same Friday night, Sudas Shabbos Kodesh, during the Friday night meal. And so it was decided by the Talmidei HaBaal Shem, by the disciples of the Baal Shem Tov, that Rav Wolf Kitzis, one of the most beloved Talmidim of the Baal Shem, would approach the Baal Shem Tov on Shabbesanachs, on Saturday night, to find out what was the meaning of the Baal Shem Tov's laughing three times. It was with great impatience that the Talmidim Amzachkam Devart, they finally came to the time of after Shabbos, of Meitzoy Shabbos, when Shabbos had left, and Rav Wolf entered the Baal Shem Tov study and asked the Holy Baal Shem what was the reason for his unusual conduct of laughing three times during the Friday night meal. The Baal Shem Tov got up and said, "Rav Wolf, why don't you come with me and I'll show you, together with the other Talmidim, the reason for my behavior." And so saying, he ordered his carriage to be harnessed and told the Talmidim to join him on this trip. The Talmidim drove all night, and when day finally came, they found themselves in the city of Kozhenitz. The Baal Shem Tov ordered the agola, the carriage, to halt in front of the home of the Parnes Chodesh, in front of the home of the leader of the community for that month. And they went out of the wagon and went into the house to daven shacharis. Afterwards, having davened and eaten something, the Baal Shem Tov called his host to him, and he said, "If you could be so kind as to send for Shapsi, the Kodesh Sforim, Shapsi, the bookbinder, please tell him that the Baal Shem Tov would like to see him." "Shapsi, the bookbinder?" the Parnas exclaimed. "But he's a nice, fine Jew, but he's very, very simple, unlettered, unlearned. Is he the one you really mean, Rebbe? This Shapsi?" "Yes, that's the one I am talking about. This simple Jew, he's the one that I would like to see. Please see to it that he comes here. And oh, by the way, see not only that he should come, but have his wife come along with him as well." Shapsi and his wife soon appeared before the Baal Shem Tov and his chassidim, to the great astonishment of Shapsi and his wife, who had no idea why the holy Baal Shem Tov would want to call, of all people, on them. How old was Shapsi? That was hard to tell, because the anias, the poverty, had its effect, and the man who stood before the Baal Shem Tov and his Talmidim stood humbly in worn clothing, bent over, with his eyes lowered to the ground in shiftless humility and wondering why he's here. "Please tell the Hasidim," said the Baal Shem Tov, "what happened to you on Friday." "Don't worry, it's all right to tell. Tell it as it happened. Don't leave anything out. We would all like to hear the story." Shamsi trembled. He said, "Rebbe, Rebbe, if there's anything that I did wrong, I'll do whatever you tell me to do tshuva." "Shamsi, don't worry about that. Just tell us how you spent that day, and we'll hear the story." "Well, Rebbe, if you insist, I don't know what there's to tell, but here it is." And Rabbi Shamsi started to tell the story of the past Friday. "Rebbe, as you know, I'm an ish poshut, a simple man. All my life I've worked very, very hard to earn my livelihood. When I was younger, I earned enough to live in comfort. But now that I'm not as strong as I once was, and I'm not able to work as hard and as diligently as I once did, I barely make enough to make ends meet. Truly, my life is not an easy one. I usually try to put aside a few kupkes each day in order so that when the end of the week comes, I could give it to my wife so she can be able to go to the market and buy the things that we need for Shabbos. Last week, however, was a very, very difficult week, and I didn't earn anything at all the entire week. It came Friday, and I still had nothing with which to give my wife so that she should buy the provisions for Shabbos. I went to shul on Friday in the mid-afternoon, as I usually did, after telling my wife that please do not borrow anything from our neighbors. After all, during all these years, Hashem has provided for us, and we never had to stoop to receiving tzedakah. And if this week, by divine providence, we did not earn anything, better that we go hungry on Shabbos than take charity or gifts from others, and maybe Hashem will help us, and we will be able to have a Shabbos. My wife promised me not to borrow or accept any gifts from the neighbors who might realize that she had nothing for Shabbos, and we would make do with Shabbos without any provisions for Shabbos. So I went to shul, and I leisurely said Shir HaShirim, preparations for Shabbos, Kabbalah Shabbos, and after doing all this, and after the davening, I stayed in the shul for a while, after all the people had already left, because I thought to myself, what would I say if people walked by my house and they're walking together with me and they ask me, why is your house so dark, Shamsi? Why are there no candles shining through the window? I didn't want to have to confront my friends and answer these very uncomfortable questions. And so I waited till they all went, and then finally I walked home very slowly. Why, what was there to rush anyway? When I had no licht on the table, no wine to make kiddush, no food to eat, what type of Shabbos would this be? Why rush home? But as I came close to my house, I looked up and I saw that the house was illuminated. But instead of feeling happy, my heart sank. My poor wife probably could not withstand this nisoyin, this test of having to do totally without on Shabbos, not being able to tzind licht, not being able to light candles before the Shabbos, not being able to provide for Shabbos, and she probably had borrowed things from a friend. Oh well, I couldn't ruin the Shabbos peace, the Sholem Bayis that specifically is to be felt even more on Shabbos than of the rest of the week, by saying to her, why didn't you hold fast? I deal with it as best as I could. I enter the house, and to my utter astonishment, I saw the table filled with all sorts of Shabbos delicacies. The smell of chicken soup and kugel filled my nostrils, and my wife beamed at me from behind her sitter. I didn't have the heart to say anything, to reproach her for her actions, but made kiddush on the wine. We then washed and made the hamaritzi over the delicious Shabbos challah. I ate then the fish quietly, trying to enjoy the fish in honor of Shabbos, Lekovet Shabbos Kodesh, in honor of the Holy Shabbos. And after eating the fish, I turned to my wife and I said, well, I guess it just was too... But before I could say anything more, she interrupted me. And with great joy, she said, do you remember, Shabsi, the lovely silk dress I wore when we first got married? I nodded in consternation, not really knowing nor understanding what this had to do with the licht, with kiddush, with challah, with shifish. Well, she went on to tell me, having nothing to cook this morning, I decided at least to do something for Shabbos and to give the house a thorough cleaning. That was the least I could do, Lekovet Shabbos, to honor the Shabbos. So I diligently started cleaning. I cleaned the house, I cleaned the floors, the tables, the furniture, and finally I got to the closets, and I turned them as well inside out in trying to clean them as best as I can, Lekovet Shabbos. And all of a sudden, I found it. That dress, yes, my wedding dress, which had worn out ages ago, but I found the sleeves I had put away. And you know what? They still had the fancy silver buttons on them. And while the sleeves were not worth anything, the buttons were made out of silver. Quickly I tore them off the sleeves and I ran over to the silversmith. He looked at them. He said, yes, these are fine silver buttons. Good silver. I can melt it down. It has value. And he gave me enough money to buy all you see here and still have money left over for next week. And Shapsi said to the Baal Shem Tov, I listened to my wife's story and my heart filled with joy. What a good tzitkonis, what a righteous woman. How could I have doubted her? All of a sudden, I jumped out of my seat. We began dancing around the table in great joy that Hashem had seen fit to provide us for this Shabbos as well, when everything seemed so black and it seemed to us that we wouldn't be able to have a proper Shabbos. And Baruch Hashem, thank God, here we have such a lovely Shabbos, and so we began dancing. I just couldn't help myself, said the Shabbosi. I was so happy that Hashem had sent this unexpected surprise to make our Shabbos a truly happy one. We went back and started eating the soup, and once again, I was seized with the urge to express my joy at having this opportunity of spending such a wonderful Shabbos. And again, we sprang up and danced around the table, both of us once again laughing joyously. And again after dessert, we danced around the table. Rebbe, Reb Shapsi said to the Baal Shem Tov, if I've done anything wrong, tell me. Do you know, Reb Shapsi, said the Baal Shem Tov, that not only did you rejoice with your wife in Shabbos, But the Malachim in heaven, the angels in heaven, also rejoiced with you. They sang and danced when you sang and danced, and they laughed when you laughed out of joy. And I too laughed three times when I saw your extreme jubilation. And now the Baal Shem Tov said, turning to Reb Shapsi's wife, he said to them, and particularly to Reb Shapsi's wife, you have the choice of spending the rest of your days in luxury and ease, or having a son in honor of the way you spent Shabbos and the joy that you expressed at your opportunity to have a beautiful Shabbos. The woman did not hesitate. Luxury? Well, who needs them? We are already old. And Hashem has not seen fit to yet bless us with children. How wonderful it would be to finally have a son in our old age. That would be the greatest bracha of all. Well then, said the Baal Shem Tov, I promise you that next year, at this time, you will have a son. And this son will not just be Stame son. He will do credit to you when you pass on to the Olam HaEmes. Please, when you have this son, let me know. And I, Emir Sashem, will come to his bris, and I will personally be the tzaddik. And so, a year later, it indeed came to pass, as the Baal Shem Tov had promised. A son was born to the elderly Reb Shapsi and his wife. The Baal Shem Tov was at the bris as tzaddik and told the parents to name the child with the same name that he was named, Yisroel. And this Yisroelical grew up to be the Reb Yisroel, the holy Kozhenitsa Magid, whose memory is for a blessing. The holy Baal Shem Tov entered the Beis HaMedrash once, his hands filled with mezonos and mashke. Drink l'chaim, he said to the Hasidim with great joy. Today, the Baal Shem Tov said, as by way of explanation, a holy neshama was brought down to this world, and that is reason to rejoice. For this tzaddik will always plead successfully on behalf of Klal Yisrael, on behalf of his fellow Jews. And it was this day that Rabbi Levi Yitzchok of Bar Dikshev, the great Melech Yosher, the great intercessor for Klal Yisrael, was born. On that day, Sutton appeared before Bez Nishal Milo and said, if this neshama comes down on the earth, it will completely abolish the Yetzer Hara. How will there be free choice? Bechira Chofshis. And the Almighty said, this man, this tzaddik, will serve as a rabbi in many villages and cities, and he will have so much time taken up with trials and tribulations that this will have a weakening on his impact on the people. Nevertheless, it was insisted by that very same angel that this great man's influence be curbed. And thus Hashem promised three things. First, that this neshama, that Rabbi Levi Yitzchok, would not meet the Baal Shem Tov. For who knows what impact the Baal Shem Tov might have on this tzaddik to augment his already great greatness. Secondly, that Rabbi Levi Yitzchok would be continually hounded by Misnagdim who opposed him. And as we know the history of all the Yisurim that the Rabbi Levi Yitzchok of Bar Dikshev had from opponents, especially in Pinsk. And thirdly, serving as a communal leader, his rabbinical duties would constantly occupy him. And in fact, the Mezritcha Magid said that this was why the Rav Levi Yitzchok of Bar Dikshev never saw the Baal Shem Tov, even though he was already about 20 years old when the Baal Shem Tov was nistalik. On the day of the Bris, the Baal Shem Tov and the Mezrik Shemagid went to the village where the Bris took place, and they were honored guests at the Bris, and brachas were bestowed by both of them on the Rachanimel on Rabbi Levi Yitzchok of Bar Dikshev. As they traveled home, the Baal Shem Tov spoke to Rav Ber, and he said to him that after my demise, you will be my Memala Mokim. And you must remember this boy at whose bris we just attended. For someday, he will be among the greatest of the great luminaries of Klal Yisroel. And the Magid turned to the Baal Shem Tov and he said, how will I possibly know that he is the same child when he comes to me? Now he's just 8 days old. He will be much, much older when he finally comes to me. How will I know that this is the same child? The Baal Shem Tov said, let me give you a simon. Let me give you a sign. If you arrive one day in shul to find the tzibur, to find the congregation waiting for somebody who has gone to the mikveh to tovel himself before hoidu, you will know that this indeed is the one, this is the Levi Yitzchok whose bris we just are coming from. Many years passed, during which the young Levi Yitzchok grew both in mind and body. His father enrolled him in the yeshiva, where his geunis shekishroinis, where his genius was readily apparent, and where he excelled in his studies in Limud HaTorah. In the course of time, a wealthy merchant approached the Rosh Yeshiva for a shidduch for his daughter, and the Rosh Yeshiva suggested the young Levi Yitzchok. Levi Yitzchok married this girl, the daughter of the merchant, and after a year of sitting and learning at home, he asked his father-in-law's permission to leave and visit Rav Dov Ber, the Mizrich Magid, of whom he had heard so much. Rav Levi Yitzchok traveled to Mizrich and went straight to the Beis HaMedrash, where he arrived just as the congregation was saying Korbonus in preparation to begin Hoidu. Seeing that the Mizrich Magid had not yet arrived, as it was the Magid's custom to say from foreign to daven until Hoidu, Korbonus and the like at home, the young man asked the worshippers to wait while he went to the mikveh. When the Mizrich Magid duly arrived, he found everybody waiting, and he said, why is everybody waiting here? What are we waiting for? And they answered him, some young fellow came in and asked us to wait until he finished going to the mikveh. Suddenly, the Baal Shem Tov's words of many years ago came back to him. And Magid as well waited for this young man who shortly returned. When davening was over, he called over Rav Levi Yitzchok and spoke to him at length. Rav Levi Yitzchok remained for quite a long time in Mezrich before he finally returned home. Parenthetically, it's worth remarking that the story is told that his father-in-law was not too pleased with his absence, and when he did return, his father-in-law asked him, what was it that you learned in Mezrich that made it so worthwhile that you spent so much time away from home? And Rabbi Levi Yitzchok answered, I learned, and now I know, that there is a God. His father-in-law looked at him in surprise. He said, that's what you learned? Anybody knows such a thing. And saying so, he called in the maidservant, a young girl, and said, "Do you know that there's a God?" And she said, "Of course I know that she's a God. I know that there is a God." And triumphantly, the father-in-law turned to Rabbi Levi Yitzchok and said, "That's what you learned? That's what you know? She says she knows that. What did you pick up? What type of knowledge did you gain?" And Rabbi Levi Yitzchok answered, "Sie sagt, aber ich weiß. She says, but I truly know." For it's one thing to know about God. It's quite another to truly know God.